You are listening to the Riverfront Church Podcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideals, and more.
So we are now at the Think and Drink Takeaway. We've been talking about the sum of the passion narrative of Jesus, and call it the passion, of course, because of the suffering that Jesus endures. And what are some takeaways we have?
Okay, my biggest takeaway, and this isn't anything earth-shattering or new necessarily, but just to reinforce that the entire trial, every aspect of this of Jesus was so rigged. So yeah, the prosecutors were changing the tune to whoever the judge was that they had to convince at the time. Just completely breaking whatever rules that they needed to. There was clearly an intent to get Jesus, and they were willing to break whatever rules to make that happen.
I guess going along with that, I always, and we talked a little bit about this last week, is did it have to happen that way? So they're breaking these rules, they're twisting the story, they're changing it. But then scripture gets fulfilled, and it's sort of like last week we were thinking about Judas and his role, and did things have to happen? Did Judas have to betray Jesus in a certain way for the scriptures to be fulfilled? And I don't really have a good answer for it, but it's something that kind of blows my mind when I think about it. Like, we cast these people as evil and as dismissing the laws and the stories, but if they didn't, how would the story have happened? So,
I did also appreciate that that explanation that I had not heard before concerning when the croc crows the three times, that may have been more in reference to a time of the changing of the guard rather than an animal thing, which really is...
Can you explain that, Ken? If I were listening to this, I'd be like, what?
Yeah, so the theory is that the cock crowing was a way of saying, when these horns are blown, indicating a new shift for the Roman guard. So when it blows three times, it's, a third shift or whatever. Similar to,
if you ever... The rooster. It was known as the rooster.
Similar to, if you work at a factory and the whistle blows, that that's a certain time. And so that... So Peter's denial happened before that shift change, as opposed to just a rooster happened to crow somewhere. So I appreciate that explanation, which may or may not be accurate, but I like it.
Well, one of my takeaway points was how we discussed maybe the reason why they went to the Garden of Gethsemane is because that's something the disciples did often, something that Jesus did often. Maybe it was just a way of, Jesus making it easier for Judas to come and for them to take him. And for me, that's symbolic in that just seeing how ready Jesus was for his death, and that, we see his struggle with, if it was another way, he prayed that he wished that be the case, but he still went for it with it. So I feel like that's a good example, at least for me, to know that, ultimately in the end, Jesus didn't struggle, but he persisted on to do what he needed to do. And for myself, just knowing that, God understands I'm human and I'm going to struggle, but nevertheless, his will be done. So.
The thing we were talking about wasn't exactly what Alan was saying, but it's his topic, is that, the church pretty early on started to look at a time of preparation in order to read the passion narrative liturgically. So the church understood this is pretty central. This is the center. This is pretty important to our faith. But when you read it or you hear it or you share it or you experience it, whether it's procession, stained glass windows, whatever it is, it's a really profound, moving experience, and it can be really heavy. Like, even just from our conversation today, it can just sort of weigh heavily, partly because we know, on the one hand, it's so true of our world. Like, there's nothing in the story that happens that you're like, well, that's weird. I've never seen that before. A corrupt trial, corrupt political system, corrupt justice system. Of course, we see that all the time. Or Or even something as, you know, funny to me as Pilate saying, hey, you know what, let Herod Antipas, Herod Antipas take this. This is his jurisdiction. I don't want to deal with the bureaucracy, right? So there are just funny moments like that that just ring so true. So even if, like, I always just think of this. If I were reading this story, even if I didn't believe, you know, in this, in a divine plan or what was going on with Jesus, I would still have to look at the story and go, oh my gosh, this story reads as such a real story. I mean, all the characters, the elements in it are just so incredibly real. So I think so that's one piece. But the second piece, of course, is it's heavy because it reminds us of our own world. But then it's also heavy because it specifically is trying to say someone who came to preach and share love and share and you know, not just fuzzy wuzzy love, but love in action, meaning, you know, to the least of these and help the poor, and sort of in line with the prophetic ministry that we read in the Hebrew scriptures, is brutally killed. I mean, it's just brutal. And that, even though we're not there yet, right? I mean, we're still exploring it. We're still at the trial. But we know where this is going, obviously. We've read the story. So I just think there's a wisdom in the church having said, let's take some time, like Lent. Let's take this time to prepare for the hearing of this story. And, you know, for people who are mostly illiterate, the processions, like if you've never seen a procession, you know, I didn't grow up Catholic, so I didn't really see them until I went to Guatemala, which is where most of my family is. When you see the processions, I mean, it's, you know, reading it's one thing, seeing it enacted, and that's how most people probably would have learned the story, that or stained glass, right? Like in the medieval age, it would have been either dramatic retelling, you know, reenactment, or stained glass through art, basically, right? Paintings, art. And it's brutal. I mean, it's just brutal. And I think we do need a time of preparation to read this stuff. I mean, if we read this all the time, you know, it would weigh pretty heavily on us. And yet, it is at the center. I mean, that's what's so compelling to me about the faith. Like, this isn't someone like, yeah, seven successful way, you know, seven secrets to success by written by Jesus the Christ. You know, it's like, and we have those all the time. Like, I wake up every single day and there's like some email sent to my inbox or some article that says Elon Musk, you know, the five strategies for building an empire, or Jeff Bezos, or however you say his name, Bezos, whatever it is, Amazon guy, you know, it's like the 10 tips to, and here we are following this man, nearly 2 billion people around the world testify, you know, in some way connected, I would say even beyond that, but 2 billion professing, let's say, followers of Jesus, who's someone who wasn't exactly successful in many ways, right? So or redefine success as faithfulness. So I just think that's just striking. And so what we're seeing here is an exposure. This is something I've shared before. It's like an exposure of ourselves. I mean, I think that's what's so hard about it, that it's a mirror. We're not like, oh my gosh, whoa, that would have been terrible if that happened. We're like, oh my gosh, this happens all the time. This is happening. It happened, and it almost certainly will happen again unless something changes. You know, somebody will be tried innocently. Some corrupt system will hurt people. On and on and on.
So I'm still processing something that Alan, who really is a genius,
that the person we're calling, calling him Alan, but may not be his real name.
What you know, one of the observations made there that I'm, like I said, still processing, still thinking through, is this concept of sacrifice that, you know, has changed over the years from, you know, very early we're sacrificing, you know, these animals on behalf of self and family, to sacrificing animals on behalf of community, to on behalf of a nation, to hear Jesus being the ultimate sacrifice once and for all, as the writer of Hebrews put it,
for the world.
And when you think about that in the lens of, yeah, there's a theory out there that the entire sacrificial system was basically so that we could feel like, okay, we're okay now. You know, like, we know we've done things to offend neighbors, offend God, offend whomever, and this system is kind of a way for us. Yeah, there's certain sacrifices prescribed just for the just in case, if you need to make sure that you're okay, you know, here's what to do. And it really is more for us to kind of be like, oh, okay, I'm okay now. And to think that this one sacrifice was done so that we could start living into that reality, that we're, you know, God's okay with us kind of thing, and we need to live accordingly.
I think there are also two more pieces to that, though, because one is they're sacrificing animals, right, as a post the fall, right? So post the fall of creation, the fall of humanity in the garden, you then have a sacrificial system. So it's a response to brokenness, right? So it is a lens through which to look at our brokenness. But at the same time, it is also that life... life either in the broken world or perhaps there's a even greater reality sacrifice is a part of life, right? So in the sense that, you know, if I give my time to help someone, I'm not giving my time to do something else I want to do, right? Or that's on a very, I know, petty level, let's say. But, you know, parents or friends or neighbor, I mean, we're doing this all the time for one another in good ways, healthy ways, unhealthy ways, you know, all sorts of ways. But there's a way in which sacrifice is such a powerful image. I think it's more than just, oh, this is to know that we're good. It's also, there's something so real about sacrifice because we're constantly doing it. You know, if you want that, you can't have that. So you're sacrificing something all the time. And then more so, let's say if you're sacrificing yourself to save someone's life, you know, that is a part of our life, you know, constantly, you know, in so many different ways. So I think the fact that God takes on that role is what's so striking, so, you know, either offensive or incredibly relieving.
Right.
You know, it's either offensive, like, you know, God, no, right? Or it's incredibly relieving that God's like, I'm taking that on. I'm assuming the sacrifice.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Riverfront Church Podcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.